You have 24 hours to give us our money.
Catapult the propaganda. The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
Funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to Super Bowl Sunday.
Greetings from the 39th parallel. We got no dog in this particular hunt. The Colts are out.
No dog in the house either.
No dog in the house either. It's really a sad day here. So we've been watching the Puppy Bowl.
The Puppy Bowl has been on. Yeah, oh, that is the greatest thing. But I have to say this.
Yes?
If you've been watching the Puppy Bowl today and you're an Animal Planet fan, did you notice that their logo has changed?
They put a brand new logo up there and they rotated the M in Anna Mull.
And fattened up the I in relation to the other letters.
Yeah.
So by that rotating there is a very clear
13. Uh-huh. Yeah. They rotate the M about 90 degrees clockwise. And so interesting stuff. You've got those 13s you can see just about anywhere. We're going to talk a lot about numbers in this particular episode as we discuss why your bank may be bankrupt. Just very quickly on numbers. We watched the movie The Number 23 with Jim Carrey a couple of nights ago. Boy, what a disappointment that was.
You know, it could have been it could have been so much better. You and I are writers, and I like to think that the people writing the Hollywood movies are better than we are, better than I am anyway.
You'd hope so.
No, I'm sorry. I could have written a better plot.
Yeah, it's
that.
Like they wanted to go in a supernatural direction with The Number 23.
Yeah.
I remember when the movie came out, the preview showed the clip discussing why 23 might be significant. Two divided by three is 666.
Exactly.
Mark of the beast, the number of a man. They don't go there in the movie. So anyway, kind of.
Well, you know, they almost do. And that's what's so aggravating for me is that there's a tiny hint that indeed there's some sort of dark force that is tracking down, you know, people in the movie. And I won't go further in case you haven't seen it, but very disappointed.
Yeah. Could have been really good. Wasn't quite so.
M. Night Shyamalan would have done a much better job with that film.
It appeared that the filmmakers were trying to do an M. Night Shyamalan type movie. So we'll leave it at that.
It's M. Day Shyamalan.
Yeah. That's about it. Yeah. 180 degrees opposed. Speaking of numbers, there have been some very interesting numbers that, of course, the major media have not reported over the last 6 weeks. Was tipped to this by urbansurvival.com.
They're busy. They're busy polling people for the Super
ballot bowl.
Tuesday.
That's right. Those are the numbers they care about. And speaking of numbers, by the way, you can figure out how many people run in a Republican primary or compete in a Republican presidential caucus by counting the number of candidates whose names are mentioned by the media and then add one for Ron Paul. Because if he finishes second, they only mention the winner. If he finishes fourth, they'll mention the top three. And this is not to say or suggest that Sharon and I are supporters of Ron Paul, because we're not.
The truth is we're supporters of no one at this point.
Like the Super Bowl.
There's no one in this race that I really feel I can get behind.
And you know, if you care to, we can go to the forum at some point and discuss why we are not big Ron Paul backers. But just let it
I'm
be
not
said.
A Huckabee backer either.
No,
I'm a nobody
true.
Backer.
Yeah. Huckabee is a big government guy, and that's not where we're at. We're more libertarian than anything else, and frankly, can't find out anything about the Libertarian Party and its candidates right now. So,
but you know, ultimately, and we've talked about this before, I am a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, I'm not so sure that our job is to make over government. So, anyway.
It's very difficult to it's very easy as a Christian to be pulled into a dominionist sort of mindset as we are told that we need to vote our candidates into office in order to, you know.
I don't feel that that's one of those mountains we need climb, and we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Speaking of numbers, though, the numbers that have not been reported by the major media relate to the amount of money being held in the reserves of the banks in the Federal Reserve System. Our banks in the United States are members of the Federal Reserve System, which is itself a private bank, by the way. It is not federal, except in name, and in that the governor, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, is appointed by the President of the United States. But it is owned and operated by private investors.
Mm-hmm.
And its job is to essentially be the backbone, the backstop.
Private investors, and many of whom are not overseas.
Yes, not American. It is the bank that's supposed to serve as the backstop for banks in the United States that are members of the Federal Reserve System. Now, the Federal Reserve has some guidelines that it has set for U.S. banks, and I'm not sure if these are Federal Reserve regulations or if these are congressional, you know, dictates, if these are actual U.S. law, but regardless, the concept...
How would the U.S. Congress dictate to a non-governmental institution?
Well, they regulate all kinds of business. I mean, you know, there are regulations as to how much... lead you can put in the water, stuff like that. You know, okay. Most private water companies have to abide by that. Things like that. But anyway, the concept of fractional banking is this. Banks are supposed to hold a certain percentage of money in its vault, in their vaults, in order to cover people who want to come in and cash checks or write checks against, to other banks or whatever, get money orders, whatever, to basically handle day-to-day business. And statistically, they found over the years that only a small percentage of people who deposit their money in banks want their money back out in any given day. So, and this is just for the sake of argument, say it's 10%. Mm-hmm. So they can take then that 10% and they can loan out, create loans for through mortgages or credit cards or whatever, auto loans, personal loans. They can create loans in value up to 10 times the amount that they hold in their vaults. Now, again, I'm not sure that that 10% is an accurate number, but that's the concept behind it. They only have to have a certain percentage of the total amount of money outstanding actually in their vaults at any given time, because they assume that 100% of us are not going to go to the bank and demand our money out at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, throughout history, or at least since 1959, which are the only as far back as I can find statistics at the Federal Reserve's website, the Federal Reserve has been posting statistics for every single month since 1959, the amount of reserves that banks in its system were required to keep on hand in reserve, okay? The amount that the banks declared that they had in reserve, and then the amount of non-borrowed reserves. Those are three separate figures. Again, the amount that they were required to keep, the amount the banks declared that they had on hand, and the amount of non-borrowed reserves. All right?
In other words, we didn't have to go and borrow from Uncle Frank for this money. This is really
right.
Our money. No liens on this money.
Exactly. These are the cash that our depositors have placed in our vaults, which we physically have on hand. Now, during any given month from 1959 on, almost 50 years, when I went back and looked, I found that there was no single month in which more than approximately 7 or 8% of those reserves that the banks said they had in hand were borrowed. So in other words, for most of the last 50 years, the banks, the depository banks of the Federal Reserve System, had 95% or better of their declared reserves in their vaults, and they were their own money, non-borrowed. Over the last 6 weeks, those reserves have entirely vanished.
You need to give the actual numbers because this is staggering.
Yeah. On December 19th, and again, this is straight off the Federal Reserve's website. On December 19th, the amount of reserves declared by the banks in the system were approximately $38.7 billion, $38.7 billion declared.
And that's kind of typical to what the numbers
right.
have been over the last
The numbers
few
range
years
usually,
and decades.
Yeah, between 38 and 48 billion, roughly, somewhere in that range. So they declared that they had about $38.7 billion in reserves, $34.8 billion of which were non-borrowed. On January 2nd.
That was December 19th.
That was December 19th of 2007.
Okay.
On January 2nd of 2008, the reserves declared $46.7 billion. $46.7 billion declared reserves. However, the non-borrowed reserves suddenly dropped to $11.4 billion. Now, again, that marked the first time since 1959 when the amount of borrowed reserves was greater than 7 or 8% of the total reserves on hand.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, you're looking at only 25% of the deposits, or rather of the reserves in the depository banks being non-borrowed. Suddenly, they were borrowing 75% of the reserves that they were declaring. But it gets worse. On January 16th of 2008, the banks declared reserves of just about $40 billion. The non-borrowed reserves was a negative number. The non-borrowed reserves was a negative number, $139 million. Understand what that means. The banks in the Federal Reserve System on January 16th of 2008 declared that they were borrowing more than 100% of the money that they declared in their reserves. I've got a degree in economics.
Was it from DITAC or something?
I don't know.
One of those 125% loans?
This is an astonishing figure. Now, when George Uhr first posted this to his website, urbansurvival.com, he said, you know, this is a preliminary figure. I wonder if they're going to clean this number up when they issue the official total. I don't pretend to understand exactly what this means, but this is the first time it's happened since 1959, which means it's historic. And it goes on, because when they post the new figure, which they did for January 30th, just this weekend, they posted then the official number for January 16th, and it didn't change. It changed by a couple million, but in effect, the numbers were the same. So, and the number posted for January 30th was worse. The declared reserves. Go ahead.
Go ahead and give the number.
The declared reserve for January 30th of 2008 in the banks that are depository banks in the Federal Reserve System, $48 billion. Okay, they said we got $48 billion in reserve. However, the non-borrowed reserves has now grown, or shrunk rather, from negative $139 million to negative $242 million. Which means, again,
repeat that.
The amount
from negative
$139 million to negative $242 million. And we repeat again, this is the first time since the Fed
at least 59.
Yes, which are all the figures that are available at the Federal Reserve's website. For the first time in 50 years, we've exceeded 7 or 8% borrowed reserves, but not just by a couple of percentage points. According to these numbers posted at the Federal Reserve's website, the entire amount of declared reserves, the reserves that banks have to keep on hand in order to conduct normal business.
Mm-hmm. Let me make two observations.
Is entirely borrowed.
Two observations. One, George Soros is quoted as saying, this is the worst economy in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Second, we have Uncle Ben, Big Ben Bernanke, riding to the rescue twice to cut rates. And if I understand it correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, those are the rates at which banks get to borrow money.
Right. Those are the banks that they... Right, the short-term rates that they want, unlike overnight loans to one another. Yes,
we know that they're borrowing money to keep their reserves up.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to cut the rate, so the money that they're borrowing anyway is cheaper?
I guess.
Is that what that means?
I guess. I've been doing some digging on this, and I've not been able to find any economic writer who's been addressing this issue, except for the brief mention that George Uhr posted at urbansurvival.com 2 weeks ago. Now, I've not checked his site in the last day or two since the new numbers were posted to see if he's written about it again. But while we hear our American politicians suggesting that the check they promised to send us for $600 or $800 later this summer is going to rescue the economy and prevent a slide into recession, we're looking at this number at the Federal Reserve's website, which seems to indicate that the entire American banking system is being kept afloat by borrowed money. And
from China? Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, Dubai, and whoever else, I don't know.
Let's bear in mind George Bush just got back from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
He was there in January, making the rounds, shaking hands, holding hands.
Yeah. He has a very long handshake.
Which is supposed to be a cultural thing, but it just, I'm sorry, it still creeps me out when I see him holding hands with the prince, you know, over there. Suddenly, there's an infusion of money from Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Which has helped to prop up some of America's biggest financial institutions, like Citigroup.
Yes.
Which is now, got an infusion of billions of dollars from Middle Eastern and from Chinese sources. Merrill Lynch, one of our largest stock brokerage firms. Remember their, you know, we're bullish on America, their old ad campaign?
Yeah.
They were rescued by an infusion of foreign cash. Foreign banks are suffering the same kind of fate. UBS, a Swiss banking firm, is living to look to foreign sources.
and Societe Generale in France,
right,
that is claiming that it's all on the back of this one really bad traitor.
Yeah.
He really wasn't very good at what he was doing, but no one was watching him. So, oh, my goodness, there goes $7.1
billion. Yeah, billion with a B. We're talking some real money here. Again, just to restate what we're seeing in these numbers from the Federal Reserve's website, which, again, the major media seems not to have noticed. Which is a shock. What we appear to have here is that something like 45 or 50 billion with a B in bank reserves in the United States, the Federal Reserve Bank's depository system, has vanished in the space of 6 weeks. Where did it go? Who loaned these banks the money to cover their required reserves? What kind of terms are these lenders getting? How will that affect the health of these banks? And how will it affect you and me? Again, if the banks are covering their required reserves, the reserves that they need to keep on hand just for everyday banking practices with borrowed money,
and it's
what
not
does
like
it
they're
mean?
Having to do it over and over again.
What
so
does it mean if you've got money in CDs, in passbook savings accounts, in checking accounts? What does that mean? I don't know.
If I understand, I wasn't alive then, believe it or not, in 1929, well, almost.
Not even.
No, not even. But had I been, I would have observed a run on the banks.
Yeah.
That was one of the many things that happened at that time, and that's one of the reasons that we have the rules, the regulations that we have now,
right,
is because if there is a crisis, you know, if there were some event that happened in the United States that suddenly everybody said, I've got to have my cash and I've got to have it now. Imagine today with this sort of quote unquote reserve.
Yeah.
This negative, non-existent reserve.
That's right.
That if everybody in the United States, or even 10% of the people in the United States, went to their banks and said, I want to close my account.
What would happen? Well, we might see... Well,
a bank holiday, I think,
we might see a bank holiday, but the other thing to consider is that Americans' net savings rate over the last year or two has basically been a negative number. Most Americans don't have any savings.
No, but most Americans at the very least have a checking account.
Yeah.
And if we all went in and said, let's have it.
Give me my money right now.
I'm closing it, and from now on, I'll just be, you know, cashing my check.
According to this number, as of January 30th, if we were to all do that right now, we would be withdrawing money that our banks have borrowed from somewhere else. And again, I don't know where. The Fed doesn't track that. That doesn't post it on their website. But these numbers are historic. I don't pretend to know what they mean, but all I can say is that this has never happened. And, and we'll put the links in the show notes at PIDradio.com so you can look for yourself and see at the Federal Reserve's website. You will not find any single month since 1959. I mean, I thought for sure 1974, when we had the Arab oil embargo and the economy doing horribly, and we had the late 70s, early 80s, 18% inflation, and the Federal Reserve raising its rates to 20% to bring in inflation under control. No, not any single month did the amount of borrowed reserves go higher than about 7 or 8% in my rough calculations. And suddenly, over the last 6 weeks, reserves have disappeared and are now totally, more than 100% covered by borrowed cash. That is unbelievable.
It's amazing.
So, I don't want to mean to be alarmist, but all I can say is this has never happened before.
Well, you know, I do recall I was alive during the Franklin cover-up, and I remember that that whole scandal hit, and a lot of people went to their banks and demanded the savings and loans.
The Lincoln demanded, savings and loan, right?
Sorry, did I say Franklin?
Yeah. Franklin was the Omaha episode with Lawrence King.
Yes,
and
well, I was alive during that, too. Yeah. I was living in Nebraska at the time. But all of that happened at about the same time.
Right.
And there were people who were literally standing in line. And I remember so many interviews on the news of you know, retired age people who were being interviewed who were literally in tears because they had gone to the bank and been told, I'm sorry, you don't have any money here.
Sure. And of course, we remember, 87, Black Monday in October. We remember the stock market collapsing after Enron folded just after 9/11. And people who had been banking their 401k on and retirement plan on the inflationary bubble that was fueling the stock market in the early, you know, early 2000, 2001, having collapsed.
I think we still have a bubble. I look at that stock market, and it worries me.
I don't think it's collapsed yet. I don't think the bubble has gone down.
No.
We keep hearing that Dow Jones Industrial Average, and just bear in mind, again, I'm no economic expert, but I talked to a few while I was doing the radio show in Columbia, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average is an average taken from 30 selected stocks, and over time, through history, as companies among that 30, that select group of 30, underperformed, according to the definition of the guys who run the Dow Jones, they would kick them out and put another better performing stock in the index. Yeah, in order to keep the number going up. So don't take the Dow Jones Industrial Average as an indicator of the health of the American economy. It's a false number.
Mm-hmm. You get, so what are we saying? What are we saying? From
right. How does it affect us? Well, first of all, again, don't believe what you see in the news or read in the newspaper entirely. Do some checking. Secondly, though, does it mean panic? Does it mean stop?
No, I don't think so. But I think it means to because you and I, we're really not. We try really not to be fearmongers because we're not commanded to fear. I mean, we're commanded to trust and believe in the Lord and trust that He is going to provide. That doesn't mean sitting and waiting in a field waiting for dollars to drop on your head. But, you know, not to panic when these things happen because Jesus warned us about it in advance. But I would say, you know, make sure that you've got several hundred dollars of cash in your house somewhere that you've or someplace where you can get a hold of it. Don't even depend on a bank box because if something were to happen and there would be a run on banks and banks had to close, you wouldn't be able to get to your bank box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we talk about stocking up on, as we have many times in the past, on staples, you know, going to a warehouse wholesale club like a Sam's or Pace, if they still have those, I don't know, Costco or whatever.
Is that another one of those stores you made up? Pace, never heard of that. You're always making up those store names.
It was Kmart's attempt to try to do Sam's Club, and it didn't last very long. But buying, you know, big bags of beans or flour or, you know, dry goods and things like
non-perishables. You can keep in a nice, cool, dry spot for a long time. Buy some Sterilite containers if you need to. You know, there are lots of ways that you can keep foods stored long-term, and we're big believers in that. At the very least, go out and get enough food to last you for a month.
Yeah, and the reason is not to prepare for a long siege where, you know, you got yours and everybody else is just going to have to tough it out.
Right.
It's because we believe in the commandment that Jesus left for his apostles that, you know, as you did for the least of these, so you did for me.
Exactly, which I believe is one of the reasons Jesus warned us about these things in advance. So when they started to come, we could say, oh, okay, we got to squirrel some stuff away. And you know what? If someone comes knocking on the door and that person is hungry, then you share.
Yeah.
And along with that, you can share the gospel.
Right. So anyway, we don't know yet what this historic, you know, vaporization of America's bank reserves means. We're keeping an eye on it, but I would just factor that into the news that you are processing through the mainstream media about the American economy and this so-called salvation plan that we're being offered by our politicians who think that sending each of us a check for about $800 is somehow going to stave off.
Well, you know, I heard, again, I have no horse in the race, so to speak, when it comes to the current run for the race for the president. Huckabee has said something that I totally agree with, and that is this money, this $150 billion bailout, is money borrowed from China.
That's true.
And the money that will be going into the pockets of most Americans will probably go to buy groceries and socks for the kids and shoes and things like that at Walmart, which, of course, sends a lot of money to China.
Yep. And that was one thing that he and Ron Paul commented on at the Republican debate broadcast by CNN the other night. Yeah. Ron Paul was the only one speaking any sense when it came to the economy, or Iraq for that matter. But that's exactly why he's not going to get elected, and he's got no chance. Too many people making too much money on the way things are right now.
Yeah. Well, we should move on to something else. We spent too much time on numbers.
Yeah. Although, you know, speaking of numbers, we could talk about the mysterious bat die-off.
Now, that is very interesting. We talked last year about the bee die-off, the colony collapse syndrome.
Colony collapse disorder.
Disorder, yes. syndrome disorder, because with the bats, it's white nose syndrome. The fact is, I did a little sleuthing over this past week. Bat numbers are down in caves. That's what it comes down to. And the culprit, according to most news stories, is what's called white nose syndrome. It's a fungus that apparently is causing attacking the bats. Their immune system is depressed. They lose weight. They're starting to die off. And in fact, their numbers this year are about 10%. In some cases, mm-hmm. what they should have been. And the fact is that in the Northeast, many of the sites I was looking at this past week, they can't find some species of bats at all, like Indiana bats. Oddly enough, Indiana bats. They can't find any, and apparently their numbers have been relatively high for the last 50 years or so in the Northeast. I went onto some forums where spelunkers hang out and cavers hang out, and especially bat-loving cavers hang out. And I will say many, because frankly, I saw a lot of posts where the discussion was, you know, we are seeing very few bats in these caves, but we're not seeing bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me so much of the bee stories, because those bees were disappearing. They
right.
weren't finding a bunch of dead bees when they opened the mm-hmm. the hives in the, you know, January, February, March. They just found no bees,
which is the missing element in these theories that have been proposed to explain colony collapse disorder. Mites, parasites, fungus, whatever. Okay, but where that explains, you know, the lack of bees, but where are the dead ones mm-hmm. that you would expect to find? And the bees have just gone. They disappeared. And we've been seeing more stories, incidentally, about disappearing bees in the last couple of weeks, too. California reporting that the walnut crop again and almond crops mm-hmm. are threatened. And in France, beekeepers in France who reported that their bees were making a comeback in 2006 and 2007 are beginning to find, as they begin to open up the hives again, that the bees are disappearing once again. And this is after they quit using a pesticide that they thought was responsible for mm-hmm. the collapse of their colonies over there in 2005, 2006. So another bizarre, mysterious species die-off. And just as bees are critical to food production, mm-hmm. pollination, bats are pretty important in the ecosystem too.
Absolutely. Bats eat tons, literally tons of mosquitoes yeah. every year. Mm-hmm. And if they were not there, the mosquito populations would just take off. And imagine a mosquito-borne illness taking over in, say, the Southeast United States. No bats, lots of mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm. It's could be a really bad situation. So that is something to watch. We're also keeping an eye on bird flu, avian flu, which mm-hmm. continues to bubble here and there. We're not seeing the alarm being sounded by the major media that we did, about 18 months ago or so, when there was that run on, what was the drug? That
Tamiflu.
The run on Tamiflu, with, you know, Donald Rumsfeld's old company. And
Tamiflu has been in the news off and on over the last month or two because there are side effects that were reported by the Japanese
yes.
scientists,
uh-huh.
oh gosh, like a year and a half, 2 years ago, that there were literal, was it suicides?
Yes, students
that
were...
deaths in young boys, I remember that.
Yeah, engaging in self-destructive behavior, psychotic behavior, which led to deaths, you know, running mm-hmm. out onto a road, being hit by cars, jumping off a balcony and, you know, to falling to death.
So why would taking Tamiflu do that?
It's a good question. I don't know.
What's in the Tamiflu?
But the FDA said, well, the Japanese data didn't show or prove anything, and so, you know, they kind of brushed it off, although since a warning or at least a directive to not give it to children below a certain age mm-hmm. was
because
sent
it tends
out to
induce psychotic behavior.
Yeah. Bear in mind that Tamiflu is not a vaccine against avian flu. It is something that is supposed to treat flu symptoms, but it's not geared toward the H5N1 virus. It's geared toward the H1 virus.
Right, and it's not the assumption is, well, if it helps with H1, it'll help with
yeah.
H5. Not necessarily, folks. They're different animals, and you know, if you think of okay, I've got a key to this door, it ought to fit this door. No, mm-hmm.
no, it is a different shaped protein, mm-hmm. and so it doesn't work. But that didn't stop a lot of governments from spending a lot of money with the manufacturers of Tamiflu to try mm-hmm. to lay in a huge supply anyway, which in our view is nothing short of another wealth transfer. another tax not voted upon mm-hmm. by the subject nations, because it wasn't just the U.S., it was also the U.K. and other European nations putting in massive orders for Tamiflu.
Well,
Roche was the company in Switzerland that was making it under license from the American developer.
Now, what do all of these have in common, at least the bees and Tamiflu?
Let's connect some dots.
That's connect some dots. You're going to pay more for chicken, for eggs, mm-hmm. for anything that has to be pollinated, a lot of fruits and vegetables.
Good point, yeah.
And add that to just the shipping costs. We've already seen it over the last year
right,
or two.
Yep.
Grocery prices are going up, 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 and they're just going to continue to go up.
Mm-hmm. And there does seem to be, we need to do a show on this sometime, just on what appears to us to be a sort of low-grade indoctrination, a low-grade PR campaign against eating animal protein, because, you know, chicken, well, that's bird flu. That's not good. Cow, well, gee, beef is bad for you. It, you know, clogs your arteries. Oh, and there's that mad cow to worry about, too. No, you don't want to eat that animal protein. To dissuade people from eating animal protein.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would the powers that be, why would the government, well, I don't know, government is, I think, too narrow a term. Why would the powers that be want to dissuade consumption of animal protein?
Well, first of all,
oh, and of course, raising cattle contributes to global warming, too, because of all the, you know, cow flatulence.
If you accept the theory that someone is trying to stop us from eating protein, okay, well, let's just start there. I think there's a lot of evidence for that. We do know, we see a lot of anti-meat eating mm-hmm. Commercials, and it's taught to kids in school. You know, vegan is the way to go. And this, but the fact is, let's assume somebody is trying to do that. Why would they want to do it? Well, I will tell you, if you don't eat a lot of protein, you're not going to be very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a firm believer in that. You can get protein from vegetable sources, but the really good protein that your body is going to thrive on, and especially your thinking,
mm-hmm.
your cognitive powers, and your immune system, you need actual meat protein.
Mm-hmm.
And beef is one of the best sources of it. Beef mm-hmm. has all kinds of other goodies in it besides, it's got vitamins B and iron and all kinds of good stuff in it other than just the protein. So, yeah, I used to raise beef, but I also raise pigs and chickens. So, you know what? Buy them all. I'm a big believer in protein. And yes. I love, you know, I love vegetables, too. So it isn't that I'm, you know, one of those, oh, you got to slap me in the head. I could have had a V8 people.
Mm-hmm.
We just, you know, hey, look, we love beans.
Yeah, vegetables are great, and we love, you know, fruit and too. But boy, mm-hmm. you know, give me that animal protein.
But you know what? If you don't get a lot of protein and you eat a lot of carbohydrates, and they can be good carbohydrates. I mean, it isn't like I'm not talking about people who are consuming sacks of sugar. I'm talking about really good carbohydrates. You know, like wheat, flour, and things like that. Good beans, legumes. If you eat a lot of that and no protein, then you have you're more likely to gain weight.
Okay.
What do the sumo wrestlers eat?
Lots of rice. Yeah. Good point. We can go on to fluoride from water, too, and how that helps your thinking. Anyway, that's another show. Speaking of water, though, bad segue, but I'll take it. There have been several disruptions in internet service in the Middle East over the last couple of weeks. Actually, over the last week.
Yeah.
That kind of defy the laws of probability. This is now yesterday, which would have been February the 1st.
Yeah, 2nd.
Okay.
Today's the 3rd.
Yeah.
Yesterday was Groundhog Day.
That's right.
Yesterday was Imbolc.
Ah, yes, in the occult calendar.
Which is a cross-quarter day on the occult calendar. And it goes back to, oh gosh, the celebration of Brigida over in the Celtic world.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way back even further to the celebration of Februus. In the Roman times, it was a time of so-called cleansing. But I want to tell you, the Februalia mm-hmm. that was taking place, the celebration around that god and some goddesses, it was was very close to the Bacchanalia.
Hmm.
Lots of drinking, carousing. And in fact, there is, if it's the term Imbolc, and forgive me, there is a term associated with this day. that means in the belly. And one of the reasons for that is because so many women got pregnant during the day. So this is a fertility time.
Yeah.
And the ancient symbol was a badger, I think, not a groundhog. But anyway, so
no,
there
we
you
don't
go.
We don't need no stinking badgers. And interesting though.
I love you.
Any excuse for a party in the ancient world. Good thing we don't do that today. By the way, Tuesday is Mardi Gras. We got St. Patrick's Day coming up later this month. So when we're talking about Bacchanalia and the pagan world,
oh,
we need to
man.
Take a look at what us Christians are doing here in the New World. But this undersea cable in the Middle East cut, I guess it would have been on February 1st, February 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the third such cable, telecom cable, cut in the span of about 36 hours, if I remember the story correctly. We will, of course, link to that in...
It was either 36 hours or 3 days. It was a very short period of time.
Right.
Though.
This one was cut in the Persian Gulf off the coast of the United Arab Emirates. And a spokesman for the telecom company in Dubai said that the incident was very unusual. They don't know why this particular cable was cut, but it did cause telephone outages and severe internet disruption. Now, the other two cables were cut off the coast of Egypt, north of Alexandria, in the Mediterranean. The explanation given was that ship had, you know, to put down anchor in a storm because it couldn't get into the port of Alexandria, and the anchor dragged across the cable, which cut the cable. However, the probability of this happening so close together led a pundit for Defense Tech, the website defensetech.org, to speculate that there was something more going on here than met the eye, or that was being publicly admitted anyway. So we're still trying to figure out what might be happening with these phone and internet connections in the Middle East, and who would stand to gain from disrupting communications in that region. Is there some military purpose that might be served by cutting the cables?
Who would
the targets have been? Why Egypt? Why UAE?
You know that very first one that was cut, I put the story at peeringintodarkness.com, PID News, and my question on that one was it really, because it was the first one, it was the only one that I knew of. It was a major outage in Egypt and in Israel and Lebanon. And at the time I thought, is this connected in any way with the Palestinian just masses going over into Egypt across mm-hmm. that border? Because I know that they were close to the Suez Canal. They crossed the, the Peace Bridge that goes over the Suez Canal. And I didn't know, because I know that the Muslim Brotherhood is very active in Egypt, and mm-hmm. they would love to disrupt things. And it occurred to me that someone, or perhaps someone who is fighting the Muslim Brotherhood, read United States,
mm-hmm.
I liked it. We won't even go there. That's a long story.
Or Hosni Mubarak.
Or Ahmadinejad. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, someone who wanted to – this kind of game is very complicated because if you do something like this, you are either doing it openly because you're fighting somebody else, or it's a false flag and you want to blame it on somebody else. Well, anyway, I was taking a look at it then. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this is really interesting. And then, of course, the second one happened. And then the third one happened.
Yeah.
Well, by the time that third one hit, there was no coincidence anymore.
No. The first two cables, by the way, snapped on Tuesday of last week. The third cable was very early Friday morning, February 1st.
Okay. So within 3 days.
Within 3 days of one another. But again, mm-hmm. these cables are, you know, deep enough in the ocean, fiber optic cables, that it's not often that these things are going to be the target or be the victim of an accidental breakage. So it's unusual to say the least.
And, well, let's remember, and you and I have talked about this, let's remember that China now has submarines that are like the Red October.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find them. They are silent running subs.
Yeah.
And we know that because a couple of years ago there was one off the coast of California that just surfaced one day, had been there for a while. And this sort of disruption could happen here as well.
Yeah.
If a sub were able to get that close to the shores of the United States and cut some cable. And I honestly have to wonder what would happen if suddenly our internet system went out across the board.
we get so much of our news from the internet anymore.
You that, and I do.
Yeah, and I imagine a lot of PID listeners do this do as well. If it went out, it would be very difficult.
We suddenly would only have the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be oh man, too horrible to contemplate. Let's follow up on the discussion we had with Lynn Marzulli last week. The UFO in Stephenville, Texas.
We've gotten a lot of email about that interview.
We really have, and we're glad to see it because this is a significant event for a couple of reasons. First of all, there are some who believe that this truly is evidence of extraterrestrial life.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hold to that view.
No.
It may well be a black government project, but it may not be the United States government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you know, as you follow the story,
or it could be a supernatural,
or it could, or the other possibility, it could be a supernatural deception. That's very possible too. What seems clear is that the U.S. government was aware of this because the Air Force finally admitted scrambling 10 F-16s, which don't look anything like what was described by the witnesses of the event, who saw something.
10 F-16s. That's quite a scramble.
It is quite a scramble. Now, I think I mistakenly identified Stephenville as being in South Texas. That's not correct. Stephenville is just a little southwest of the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, about 60, 70 miles. It's also northwest of Waco, Texas. And, of course, just west of Waco is Crawford, Texas.
Well, that sounds familiar to you.
Yeah, that's where President Bush has the ranch where he and Laura go to unwind. It is also restricted airspace. The aeronautical maps of that area will show that there is a restricted airspace and then a verboten thou shalt not fly over this spot airspace right in the middle of it, which is the area right over the Bush Ranch. The unidentified flying object came awfully close to the edge of this restricted airspace, which is very likely why the Air Force scrambled those F-10s.
They denied it, though. Originally, they said, no, we didn't have anything in that area. Don't know what you're talking about.
Right. And finally, enough people, maybe they figured enough coverage had been given to the event that they couldn't actually deny it credibly anymore. And so they did admit, okay, well, we had 10 planes up on a training exercise, which, again,
okay,
at
we
least,
did the nose.
Yeah. Admits that they were in the area, but doesn't admit what they were there for. But I think it's very observant that a couple of folks have pointed out that Stephenville is not that far from the restricted airspace over the Bush Ranch, and that if there was an unidentified flying object getting close to the edge of the restricted circle of airspace over the ranch, it makes sense that the Air Force would scramble fighters. Now, who was operating that unidentified craft, we don't know, but apparently the Air Force was aware of it, and they were after it.
You know, it seems to me that if they genuinely thought it was an aircraft from another country, why not come right out? And at the very, even if you don't know who it is or it's someone that you are trying to be friendly with, come out and use this situation for propaganda. I mean, it amazes me that the government so often sits on a story and says, nope, never happened.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to cause mass panic or don't want to admit that an enemy craft could fly over American airspace that close to a restricted site.
Well, that could be.
Undetected.
That could very well be.
Yeah, I suspect that they would rather decline to admit something like that.
Now, I know the gentleman who spoke with Lynn Marzulli was a very good witness, and he's convinced that what he saw was not made by human hands.
Mm-hmm.
Or nothing that looked like it could be.
Right. The thing to take away from Lynn Marzulli's interview last week, and if you've not listened to it, we encourage you to do it, is that sadly Christian churches in that area don't appear to be addressing the situation. They appear to be ignoring it. He basically called a number of churches in the area and asked if he could come down and speak about this at their churches, and no one took him up on his offer.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that the people, like the gentleman who saw this and had his worldview challenged, I hope that Christian churches in that area are admitting, addressing, and equipping their congregations mm-hmm. to deal with things like this.
You know, I like to think if someone had come up to the Apostle Paul and said, you know what, they're saying over here in Ephesus that mm-hmm. there were some, I don't know what they are, some things flying up there that look like they might be, you know, I don't know, other from another planet maybe. We don't know. What do you think there, Paul? Oh, I don't know. That's crazy talk. I think Paul would have said, well, let me tell you what I know about thrones, dominions, and principalities.
Uh-huh. And that's what we're dealing with. And that's why, as you go back through the archives on P80 Radio, you'll see that we address the issue of unidentified flying objects, not just because it's a tantalizing mystery that we want to get to the bottom of, not because we think that we must have space brothers out there someplace that are trying to contact us, but because as Christians, we have to be prepared to fit evidence, of things happening around us into our mm-hmm. worldview. If you don't, if your worldview can't account for things that are happening in the world, then you need to change your worldview because
mm-hmm.
you're living according to a comfortable fantasy. And the evidence points to the existence of unidentified craft, whether they are presenting themselves as extraterrestrial or not. The evidence points to people actually being abducted and abused mm-hmm. by these so-called extraterrestrials. And as Christians, again, we need to accept the evidence and say and consider how this fits into our worldview. And I think Lynn Marzulli has done that. Others like Tom Horn, Guy Malone, Mike Heiser have also done so. Joe Jordan, and I think that you can put together a cohesive worldview as a Christian that encompasses UFOs and extraterrestrials in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mike Heiser, if you read his definition and study as an expert, a lettered, degreed expert in ancient Near Eastern languages, that even if a craft of extraterrestrials really did land on the White House lawn, that as Christians we could say, okay,
mm-hmm.
that does not shake or change anything.
No, exactly. And I think right now, because the average Christian in the pew is not being taught this, that Christian's worldview may well be shaken
yeah.
if that were to happen.
Right.
It shouldn't be.
No. Well, and again, we'll put links to that to the airspace map showing the distance between Stephenville and the Bush Ranch at the website, PIDradio.com.
I've got one.
Yes.
Hot spot on Saturn's chilly pole.
Now, Saturn is really far from the sun. Now, of course, we talked about
Saturn last week. We talked about the Cassini probe a little bit last week, and we've gotten some email on that as well.
Right.
I honestly don't know if any of that story is true. I do know the Cassini probe is up there
mm-hmm.
taking all kinds of amazing photographs, and one of those is an image of the North Pole on Saturn, which is the pole that has the hexagon shape.
Which is really bizarre.
Which is really bizarre.
Maybe that's where the bees have gone.
That's
They're
it.
Building the giant hexagon. It's the biggest hive in the universe.
Ever. Saturn's chilly North Pole has a hot spot of compressed air. So what's heating up the North Pole? South Pole on Saturn also has a hot spot. And I think that there are some who say, well, it's probably volcanic activity underneath the ice. The South Pole also has this mm-hmm. huge storm, just really, really big storm with a very, very well-defined eye wall, so well-defined, it's creepy to look at.
To look at some pictures of that, that'd be pretty cool.
It's like a hexagon on one end and this big eye on the other.
We'll have to post some links to that, too, at PIDradio.com.
And we've got some people trying to track this down, but what I have read is that the Cassini probe, if crashed, which is what everybody's saying will happen, will probably go into one of the poles.
Okay.
And I don't know how, I don't know how they're going to manage to do it. Really don't know how they can aim it at a specific spot, but apparently this is possible. And if so, this is the thing, and this is why I had to bring it up, because there are some, believe it or not, when you're talking about out there theories, there is a theory that the Earth is hollow.
Mm-hmm.
We've all seen that, the Perry theory. It was a Perry who flew?
Admiral Perry, yeah.
Yeah. There's also a theory that, yeah.
Or was it Admiral Byrd?
Byrd. It was Byrd.
Yeah.
There's also a theory that Saturn is hollow.
Hmm.
and that's the sort of source of the heat. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know that I really subscribe to the hollow Saturn or hollow Earth theory, but I think it really is interesting that there is a source of heat on Saturn. And again, we're getting back to the discussion we had last week concerning Arthur C. Clarke's telegraphing this sort of propaganda message to us. His original manuscript was Saturn, not Jupiter.
2001 Space Odyssey.
Saturn that was going to be ignited by these aliens and formed into a brand new solar system.
Brand new star.
Yeah.
Yeah, called Lucifer.
Yes.
And for the movie, they changed Saturn as the destination planet to Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
Why, don't know, but that's what they did. And then for 2010, when Arthur C. Clarke wrote the sequel novel, he changed his novel and acknowledged that, it was different from the first book. So anyway, it fits into this whole Cassini probe theory, which, again, we don't pretend to have enough knowledge of what's
in
the probe.
I took one astronomy course.
Yeah, and I know... knowledge whatsoever of nuclear physics and how big a payload you need to actually...
Oh, how hard can it be? Come on.
What is interesting, though, is that the North Pole of Saturn is the side that's facing away from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, just like our poles are cold, you would assume that without an internal heat source, the poles on Saturn would be colder, especially the North Pole, which faces away from the sun all the time.
Yeah, you'd think
would be colder,
so, wouldn't you?
But it's not. So... we're keeping an eye on that, just sort of a low-key, because, again, whether we believe it or not, there are people who do apparently really believe this, and it helps us to analyze their actions and determine what exactly these guys are trying to do by following what it is they believe.
That is the truth. I do want to say one more thing, and it relates back, actually, to the story about the cut cables, and that's March 10th through the 14th this year. These are the dates that we understand.
Glad you remember to bring that up.
Take place the Cyberstorm 2, which is a terror drill, anti-terrorism drill, conducted by not just our government, but also, I think, New Zealand, Australia, the UK, Canada may be in there. This is a time when they take a look at the scenarios of what ifs concerning our internet infrastructure, our communications infrastructure. If there were a cyber attack on the United States that took us out, because it's not just you and I, you know, and people listening to PID who would, suddenly lose their access to the internet.
Well, yeah.
There are a lot of government agencies that would suddenly lose their access to the internet, and they depend upon that. And I would assume that including within that is the possibility of taking out a satellite via a satellite, you know, a viral upload or something to a satellite. Add to that... a mystery story that is connected coming out of New York involving the Empire State Building.
This is really bizarre. Apparently, there is a dead zone around the Empire State Building, which has a tendency to, or has the effect of killing cars. Cars parked in a 5-block radius around the Empire State Building will often be incapable, just unable to start.
They'll just stall out.
Yeah.
The radio still works. The lights still work.
Right. So it's not an electrical issue in the sense that the battery has been drained.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the whatever it takes to fire the ignition has been disabled. And this is a case where it's great business for the guys who operate tow trucks, because apparently they're pulling dozens of cars out of the area in any given week. But it's become sort of a local... novelty around New York City, that if you park too close to the Empire State Building, there's a chance that you won't be able to get your car to start again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what could be causing that? What kind of electromagnetic phenomenon could possibly cause that?
Well, the blame is placed on all of the antennas and satellite dishes that are now on the top of the Empire State Building that had to be moved there from the Trade Center towers when they collapsed, that we had to put them somewhere. I don't know that I buy that. Okay, maybe. But just if you want to have another possibility, there are weapons out there, microwave weapons, that will zap your car.
Yeah, and it just makes you wonder if the electromagnetic effect is strong enough to prevent cars from turning over. What's it doing to the humans? What's it doing to biological entities that are within this 5-block radius?
And here's one more thing.
Yeah?
Just one more thing, as Steve Jobs says. Do you remember the comet that exploded last fall.
17P Homes. Yeah, the one that turned green and got really bright.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and for a while was the biggest object in the solar system because it expanded out to larger diameter than the sun.
Well, we're now seeing a couple of new asteroids that, mm-hmm. that just had near misses with the Earth. One of them was discovered the day that it did the flyby.
Yeah, TU-24. Yeah.
So I'm looking at that thinking, honestly, is it possible that we're getting debris from that? And if we get debris from it, is it possible that we're also getting electromagnetic radiation from it? And if so, can that in some way disturb the magnetosphere of the Earth?
These are questions that
I don't have the answer to.
Yeah, it might affect the weather.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thought.
We're seeing some really interesting weather. Not fun in any way. But China, I mean, they're digging out of blizzards.
Yeah.
And it is not fun in China right now.
No, the northeastern U.S. has been hit with a number of snowstorms this winter. Here in Indiana, we've gotten a fair amount of cold weather.
We had a storm go through there the other day that we looked outside and literally the rain was horizontal. It was coming through here at 85 miles per hour.
Yeah. And again, bear in mind, it's rain here in late January that was coming mm-hmm. through. We were having thunderstorms. Weird weather patterns. But, you know, we don't pretend to have an answer for that.
No, but we have lots of questions.
Lots of questions. And we are more than happy to foist those off on you. Now, if you have questions for us, of course, you can pose those to us anytime by sending us an email to radio@peeringintodarkness.com or Derek@peeringintodarkness.com. Or
Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com. And I also want to tell you that Derek, bless his little heart, he's so cute, and he has been working so very hard to restore shows that over the course of switching servers, we somehow lost from our archives. But he's doing better than that, folks. He is making sure that every one of the shows that is now uploaded is going from 16 kilobits mm-hmm. to 32.
Right.
They're FM quality now.
Yeah. So the original shows were put out at AM radio quality, which was kind of a low grade, okay for voice, but not for much else. They've been upgraded, so they sound a little better, mm-hmm. which is kind of a nice thing. But bear in mind that while we're also restoring the show notes, that some of the links over the course of the last 18 months have disappeared, dried mm-hmm. up. Trying to go through and check as many of the links as possible so you can go back and check source material on the topics that we talked about. But most importantly is going back and getting some of those foundational interviews that we did with guys like Tom Horn.
And Guy Malone. He's a guy.
Guy Malone, yeah. Mike Heiser, Russ Dizdar. Dave Duncan, yes. And by the way, Dave, if you are listening to these shows anywhere, please get in touch with us. We just want to know that you're okay. Found a mirror site that copied and reposted Dave Duncan's The New World Order scam mm-hmm. website. Dave's site has gone offline, and we've tried to contact Dave by phone and email without success over the mm-hmm. last couple of months.
Now, we're not being alarmist on this because Dave's, we think, is probably just for whatever reason, has decided to lie low. Or just wants to go analog for a while. That's fine, because you and I have done that a couple of times where we just need to be away from the internet. And if that's what's going on with him, then God bless him. But, you know, just send us a note. Just say, hi, fine.
Yeah, and just keep him in your prayers. So, anyway, those interviews are going to be restored over the next couple of weeks. Did a couple of months worth, May and June of 2006, which included our summer conspiracy series mm-hmm. and our prophecy series with David Lowe, Peter Goodgame, Russ Dizdar, Rick Wiles, Ken Parsons. So some good stuff in there, and a couple of interviews with Captain Eric May, you might remember. Go back and check those out, see if his predictions are holding up and whether we were off base on any of these older shows. We're not going to go back and edit or try to correct the historic record on anything we might have predicted or warned you about.
Historical documents.
Yes.
Those poor people.
They will all be there. And we're also going back and tagging the shows. So if you want to look for specific topics of discussion during any of our shows, you'll be able to find those and pull those up too. So, again, just getting those all restored as we go through. Be patient. We'll get them up as quickly as we can. But I think you'll find once we get those restored that you'll be able to go back and get those and find them a lot more easily than you have been to this point.
Well, that wraps it up for Super Bowl Sunday.
That's right. Show notes at PIDradio.com. And, of course, you can follow the link to the Piercing of the Darkness forum to discuss this show or anything else we discuss here. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Oh, a new day comes. news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.